This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. Hello there. My name is Adam Jabber. This is the Out of Bounds podcast, and we've got another great episode for you today. Today, we have Lorraine Huber on the show. Lorraine is a professional skier, a coach, a speaker. She does all the things. She's also the 2017 Freeride World Champion. And she's also one of the subjects in Katie Burrell's new film, Coach, which will premiere on the 20th, which I think is this week. And I'll include a link to that in the show notes as well. It's really good, and you guys are going to very much enjoy it. This interview was recorded a few weeks ago, so it's not as current as maybe we would like leading up to the show, but we don't really talk about the actual movie that much anyway. Talk about a bunch of stuff, talk about skiing, talk about the difference between being an athlete and being a coach and the mindset aspect of it and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors for this week. This week, we have Pearl Wax as a sponsor for the show. Pearl is, as some of you know, a wax company, if you didn't get that from the name of their company. Pearl is one of the most environmentally friendly wax companies out there, which sounds a bit like an oxymoron. They give to 1% for the planet. They're a Colorado-based company, and most importantly, they don't use any fluoros and no toxic chemicals in any of their products. And I guess most importantly, I'm doing a lot of double words today. The wax is good. It's actually like the best wax that I've used, and I'm not kidding. Like, they use it like your mountain shop that you go to, like to get your like pro tune. Chances are they use Pearl Wax. All kinds of good stuff. They also have a new natural wax pack, which I just got some of, and I can't wait to try it. It is biodegradable, sustainably sourced, PFC-free, and again, as always, no fluoros, no toxic chemicals. And it just glides well. So if you want to save 20% off on your first purchase of Pearl Wax, you can use promo code OUTOFBOUNDS, all caps, on pearlwax.com and save 20%. So, I'd highly recommend you do that. Thank you to Pearl Wax. You can also give them a follow on social media. It's just at Pearl Wax on the social. And let them know that we sent you. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance, or on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to the show. It helps a ton. And yeah, I'm done babbling for now. Without further ado, Lorraine Huber. Lorraine, tell people who you are a little bit, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I always confuse people because I tell them that I'm from Austria, but then I chat with an Aussie accent and they don't understand. But I'm actually half Austrian, half Australian. I'm a dual citizen. I was born in Austria in Lech am Arlberg. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's the biggest ski area in Austria, or belongs to the biggest ski area in Austria, and I love to say it's the best, but of course I'm biased.
Yeah.
And then when I was 8, I moved to Torquay in Australia, which is super famous for surfing. So I was very fortunate to grow up like literally in a ski resort where the closest lift was just 100 meters away and like by the beach. So I don't know why I got that lucky that I did. Yeah, and what else? So I'm a professional freeride skier. I'm also a certified ski guide and a mental strength coach. And I've been skiing like full time now as a job for about 15 years. And so I have seen a lot of the industry develop. I was one of the very first female skiers in Austria to be able to call themselves a professional skier. I was almost at the very beginning of the Freeride World Tour. Yeah, it's something I actually have really enjoyed is seeing how the whole progression is going along in the industry. A lot of changes, Adam, as you of course know.
Yeah. What do you think for you, like, what's been the most noticeable change? I mean, because a million things have changed. I mean, even like the skis that we're skiing on are so different, right? Like, what's different for you?
You mean in, like, out of a perspective of an actual athlete?
Yeah.
And your job as an athlete?
Well, as Lorraine, like, what's different?
Well, so, you know, whereas before, to get yourself out there and to represent your sponsors and people you're working with, you very much focused on like magazine shootings and magazine covers and getting a part in a ski film, that kind of thing. Now it's just all about selling yourself over social media. It's getting more and more important for my partners as well to be very active in that regard. And whereas before, athletes, I would say, weren't in competition to people like influencers. And I would say now athletes are actually in direct competition to influencers. So you could, like, I like to think of it as influencers, their sport is Instagram. Hmm. Like, they're really good with the app. Their whole focus is creating content for the app for their followers. They know their followers really well, the whole, like, obviously, technological side of things, but they can really just focus on that is like their job, and it really is a full-time job because content these days is getting better and better, and you're really competing for the attention of people out there. So, like, I like that saying, the new currency is attention, you know, and that's what you get paid for as an athlete, and these influencers are very much in competition with athletes now. So I think athletes have to juggle much more than they used to. Like, that's something that I definitely, that changed for me, you know, whereas before I could focus much, much more on just the skiing side of things, on developing my skills and like becoming the best skier I can be. I feel like more than ever now, you have to be very good at self-marketing over these social media platforms. And even editing and like filming and just a whole bunch of things. Yeah, you got to definitely be multi-skilled. It is like not good enough just to be a good skier. Like, it hasn't any way ever been really to be a freeride skier professionally. Right. You've always had to also be good at creating value for your sponsors, which I think some athletes understand better than others. But yeah, more than ever now, you just have to play the social media game if you like it or not.
Yeah. What do you like it? Not that it, I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, we know it's a thing.
It is what it is.
But
look, I have a love-hate relationship with it. I think there are some really positive things about it. Like, it has put more power in the hands of each individual person, but I think also more responsibility in that way. Whereas, like, it's, let's just say it needs to be managed very consciously. I think it's very easy to fall into the trap of just being on your phone too much and spending too much time and not being able to really rest and recover, recharge your batteries when you need to, and not being in the present moment as much. Like, I think that needs to be managed. Because if you're not consciously aware of that, you'll just end up getting sucked in, because those apps are really designed to grab your attention and get you on there as long as possible every day. So you could say it's kind of a really neat challenge as well to be more present and mindful, which I think a lot of athletes, especially in action sports generally, are good at. But yeah, I mean, it can be great because you can build your brand. You have a lot more power to build your own brand, like a lot more personal influence, which I think is great. You're not just now all of a sudden dependent on like that big movie part, or, you know, only certain athletes can even have the chance of that because they have the sponsors who can finance that, right?
Right.
So that's the positive of it, but it needs to be managed. And I think it's also important to align yourself as an athlete with brands who still recognize the value of offline relationships, because I have worked with partners who like place all the emphasis on likes, on how many likes, how many comments, on the whole social media game where they're fully just going towards influencers and they just completely lose sight of the skiing itself. And then I have other partners who have a bit more of a healthy balance and who still recognize that my offline relationships with potential customers who I go skiing with or people who know me from films or from competition who I can inspire and reach out to, that that is honestly worth more in terms of being able to transfer into ski sales than how many likes I generate and how many comments I can generate. So I do look to work with people who have a bit, like they're still their head screwed on there a little bit. It's really not all about likes and comments, in my opinion.
No, I fully agree with you. And I actually think that like it should be part of your, like it should be part of the whole package. Like, and I think that's kind of what you're saying mm-hmm. too. It should be, it's just the focus is kind of shifting, I guess, to where it's becoming more and more important to just have that following. Because I think a lot of sponsors are looking at an athlete or a creator or whatever it is. And they're like, okay, how does this person, like how many people care about this person as if it drives immediate sales? But I don't know what drives immediate ski sales anymore. It seems like it's so confusing and the market is so flooded and everything is so flooded with like content and information and like
totally
all this stuff. It's like, it's hard to navigate.
It is. It's getting more and more complex, but I agree with you. It is a measure of the influence you have in an online world, let's say, and that is important and that is influence. But I think an athlete can only be responsible for like generating leads for a company. So, for example, bringing people to the website of a sponsor, but the same, like, but then from there onwards, it's really up to the company to convert those leads into actual sales. Mm. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's a constant topic, I think, on this show. And like, I'm going to try to not stick to it too much because people are getting sick of me talking about social media, because I think everybody gets it. Like, we all know it's an issue and we're all like still stuck to our phones like every single hour of every single day. And it's a complex problem, I guess. Yeah. How has the tour changed? Since you started competing in it? I mean, you've been competing in the Freeride World Tour for how long now?
I competed on the tour for about 8 years.
Okay.
And then before that, the qualifiers as well. But 2018 was my last season on the tour. I was on the tour again last season as a coach and doing the Freeride World Tour inside a video series as a host, and I was a forerunner and did a whole bunch of things which is all a big topic in our new film Coach with Katie Burrell and film by Colleen Gentleman, but I'm sure you'll ask me about that a bit later. The tour has changed a lot in the way that there is a much bigger emphasis on freestyle tricks now in the backcountry. It has been for a while, but it's really becoming absolutely, like, it's almost like if you can't flip and spin, you won't be able to even qualify for the tour. And I actually think that Aymar Navarro from Spain was literally the only person who qualified without doing tricks last season.
Really?
Yeah. It's an interesting statistic, but it really shows how there's, you know, this generation of pure big mountain skiers are really kind of like phasing out. And then you have people like Reine Barkered, you know, my good friend from Sweden. He's such a veteran on the tour. I'm sure your listeners know him. Mm-hmm. He has managed to like keep reinventing himself. Like, he's throwing awesome backflips and stomping them in competition now. So because he loves the tour so much, he's been able to like stay on board with that. But if he hadn't have really developed himself in that way, he wouldn't really be able to keep up anymore. Mm. And the thing is that the tour has changed in a big way in that they used to have just fully rad big mountain venues like Mac Daddy Face in Revelstoke. It was such a sick venue, such a beautiful face. And now the faces are much smaller. They're more playful. So they're not as consequential. So they definitely offer themselves more to like trying some tricks. And, you know, if you fall, you're not going to like tumble over the like Hollywood cliff, for example, like it is on the Bec in Verbier.
Right.
So really the first big mountain face on the tour last year was Fieberbrunn. Mm-hmm. You know, the Wildseelode that has a nice steep and quite like often sharky top section. The bottom half is playful again, but that was really the first face that had any kind of big mountain characteristic. And then you've got Verbier, which is still, for me, the most exciting venue to watch. But that's been a big change. It used to be much more focused on big mountain skiing. And now with this new format, they've actually, they want to make it more exciting for viewers. So now there's a cut after the first three stops. So after Andorra, they'll do a cut and only a certain percentage of riders will get to compete at the last two stops. Hmm. And the tour wants to kind of force the riders to be even more gnarly, to put on even more of a show and you know, to risk more. And that's why they've got two runs in Fieberbrunn, and the best run counts. They want riders to even push harder.
Right.
So that's another change in my eyes. It used to be more the person who was most consistent throughout the whole season is world champion. It was like 4 out of 5 results. So you
got it.
You only have like one scratch result, right? You can screw up once, but then otherwise you got to be pretty consistent. And that's how I also, yeah, I think a world champ is someone who's consistently dominating the field as opposed to like risking everything and getting lucky maybe or something. But
yeah,
I think honestly, the riders are already pushing really hard. I mean, it's, you know, it is gnarly. Competition is gnarly.
For sure. I mean, absolutely. If you see what these people are doing, like it's insane. Do you think that translates to it being more dangerous overall? Because like the incentive is now for people to huck, like instead of people being more consistent, like they're both aspects are dangerous for sure. But does that like kind of incentive, I guess, from the tour, like from this setup, like is that problematic in any way?
Well, I definitely think the new format incentivizes more risk taking. You know, it's so condition dependent often. Like that's something that I really like about the tour is that if conditions aren't good to charge, they'll call it.
Right.
You know, they do have the athletes' safety. That is a big concern for them. So that's something I definitely trust the tour with because they obviously also want to see a good and safe show. But, yeah, this new format does incentivize more risk-taking for sure.
Yeah.
And that's the intention behind it.
Yeah. And I guess it's like I forget who I was talking to earlier in the year and they were saying like they want it to be more exciting, I guess. And I kind of felt like it was exciting beforehand and like it just was kind of marketed in a weird way, especially in the US, like the way that it was formatted on like for people to go watch was very odd. And it still kind of is like, at least there's live streams everywhere and there's a million different ways people can access content now. So it's more accessible, but
yeah,
I feel like they were kind of addressing a problem that wasn't necessarily the problem.
Yeah. Like so much depends on the choice of the venues and, you know, I mean, in recent, like last season, it was so tough in Andorra with venues. And when I was competing like year after year, we wouldn't be able to ski the A venue. It would be like the B, maybe even the C venue. And that's just a huge challenge generally in putting together a freeride competition. It really isn't easy. It's tough.
No, I can't imagine it.
So if you have good venues like Mac Daddy Face, Verbier, Wildseelode in Austria, like those are exciting venues that lend at least 5 to 7 like distinct lines, I think it's always going to be pretty exciting for the viewers. But yeah, it's just hard to control conditions, hard to impossible pretty much.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. What was the transition like for you going into more of like a coaching, like more into a coaching role, I guess, from the actual like being the athlete role? Like what's like, that's so much different. And you see a lot of people, I guess, in other sports make the transition to either like, okay, they were an athlete, now they're immediately a broadcaster, or like They're immediately mm-hmm. going into coaching. For some people, that transition works really well. For some people, it's really hard. What was good? What was bad? What was weird about that mm-hmm. part?
Like for me, the transition was it was quite difficult, actually. Because I had been competing, you know, as recently as 2018, and like you say, to be coached the very next year, which ended up being quite a spontaneous last minute decision, I'm going to say, because the tour offered me a job as commentator for all of the tour stops. And then I chatted to Hedvig Vessel, who I ended up coaching, and she had told me the winter before that she was really, you know, wanting a coach and wanting that sounding board and someone to get feedback off. And so we chatted and decided, like, quite, I think it was in December, to work together. So it wasn't like this conscious step that I took of, okay, now I've finished being a professional athlete, now I'm going to be a coach. It was very like fluid. Like I'm still a professional athlete. I've still got contracts in place with my partners. So I have that role as an athlete, but right. then to have this additional role as a coach was challenging because you really have to step out of the athlete role and learn new skills entirely. Like it's one thing for me to choose lines for myself. It's such a different thing to consult someone in choosing a line for their style of skiing. So it was a super big challenge, but I mean, I love challenges. It was a very intense and challenging winter for me in a positive way, but I'm still grateful that I can work as a professional athlete still and work together with my partners and you know, develop in new directions. I'm putting a lot more emphasis now on ski mountaineering stuff. But it was hard for me to let go of the tour. It really was. Like the tour for me was such a motivator, and it gave me so much drive to train and to just ski as much as possible and push hard. And I think I developed as a skier much faster because of the tour, because it gave me that goal and that structure as well throughout my season. It was good to have those stops where you know, okay, by then, by the middle of January, like I'm going to be on my A game, because that's when, you know, the pressure's on. That's when I get to perform and run and do my lines. And I liked that. That was good for me because I feel like as a freeride athlete, you have so much freedom. And so much that requires a lot of self-discipline to make sure you get a lot out of your season. And the tour was just a really nice structure in that way to organize your season pretty much. And I think that was hard for me when I decided to quit.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine so. Do you consider yourself like a very competitive person? And did that play a role at all, like when you were like on the sidelines coaching, do you think about the competitive at, like, do you want to just like go back out there? Like, is that like a thought that even goes through your head?
That's an interesting question. I often ask myself, like, am I even competitive? Because I often felt that I wasn't, that I just didn't have that kind of hunger in me, but I just figured out that I never was really that interested in being the best. I wanted to be my best. So, you know, once I learned on tour to stop comparing myself to the other athletes and to just focus on my own progression and developing my skills, like comparing myself to myself, basically, that's when things really started to flow for me on the tour and I had so much more fun. So if you define competitive as wanting to be the best and like beat others, be better than others, then no, I'm not competitive. Like if someone is like shredding this amazing line and skiing super well, better than me, that is something that I respect, even if I don't even like that person, but it's like, that's awesome and good for you. I was just much more focused on my own skills, but I needed to learn that. I didn't do that initially. Like initially I was thinking much more about what are the other competitors doing and who, you know, maybe I have to do that too or should do that. which actually takes you away from your own skiing and your, the way that you want to personally ski. And I think it's important to figure that out for yourself.
Is there, was there like a switching point? Like, was there something that happened that you were like, okay, like this is how I need to start looking at it? Or were you just like one day you just woke up and you were like, okay, like I only care about the way that I'm doing this now?
Well, the whole mental side of life even, but my sport in particular has always been like fascinating to me. And so much so that I went back to university because I did a business degree when I was in my 20s. And then I went back to university recently to study a master in mental strength coaching. I was just fascinated by the whole mental side of it and how much potential you can tap into by being mentally strong. So, you know, I was always reading a lot and learning about the flow state was probably when it really clicked for me. But it was a very organic process. There wasn't like this one moment where I was like, oh, this is what I have to do. It was like a constant curiosity and like searching and learning and wanting to improve. Like that's definitely something that's in me. Like I'm a very curious person.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe one of the keys to success if you want to get the best out of yourself.
Yeah, is actually wanting to learn more.
Yeah, like being curious, open, like inquisitive, yeah, focusing on learning and growth rather than focusing on the points and the results and who you want to beat, but really focusing on like how is it that I want to ski, you know, how is it that I want to feel, like what moves I want to do, what kind of style, and just making it all about the skiing. And the irony of that, if you focus on your progression and growth instead of the results actually come as a side effect. The good results will just like happen. That was, yeah, it's fascinating. It really is.
I think that'll be good for a lot of people to hear because that it's good to be inquisitive. Like it's good to ask questions. It's good to wonder about things. It's good to like want to know how to do things better because I think, especially in skiing, for some reason, there's like such a weird stigma about like learning more. And like, if you don't know how to do a certain thing, like asking how to do it and like putting yourself out there, like, hey, like, I don't know how to do everything. I don't know how to do this well. How can I go find whoever it is that knows the thing or wherever that information is? Like, it's good to hear, I guess, somebody like yourself say that, like, that is a thing that you like to do.
Totally. It's, and you know, I often tell people that it wasn't talent that got me into that top spot as world champion. It really wasn't. It was just that willingness to learn and also just not giving up, because that's something I've seen with my mates or just other people on the tour. You know, they might be on the tour 1 or 2 years and things don't go very well. And they get very disheartened and they just kind of like, the tour's not for me and, you know, it kind of sucks and like free riding shouldn't be competition anyway. And like things take time. Like you can't expect to be on tour one season, 2 seasons and just end up winning everything. I mean, if I had have done that, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere. I just kept going. So I think, you know, that's just one of the most important things is just to keep going and keep working. You're just not there yet. I certainly wasn't this super duper talented skier. I mean, I started super late. I didn't compete until I was 28.
Really?
No. And, you know, for 10 years, until 8 and 18, I wasn't even skiing that much because I was living in Australia. I didn't ski in Australia. So, you know, I didn't have a racing background, as is the case for all Austrians, really, who are in at least my generation. They all come from racing, which gives you such a good base. You know, I never raced. I never had any professional ski training. So I feel like I had a lot to learn also with competition and dealing with the whole pressure to perform and being in that start gate, regulating your like emotions and your arousal levels and dealing with all that stress. I had a lot to learn. So if I had have given up like early in, there's no way I would have become world champion.
It's interesting to hear. I had no idea that you didn't start competing until 28. That is definitely interesting.
Yeah, and that was in 2008, and the tour didn't really. I think in 2006 the tour had this event called the Rookie Quest.
Yeah.
Like I don't think the tour. I think the tour started in 2007, if I'm correct. I should actually, or was it even 2008? I think they had their 20-year anniversary one year ago. Yeah, so the tour hadn't really been around. Like we didn't have junior events or qualifiers. So, and in the Arlberg where I grew up, it's a very conservative kind of place. So, skiing there is all about doing wiggly salt and pepper shaker turns in the fall line and like trying to scoop turns. Right. And it's still like that. So luckily I was able to ski with snowboarders. Like I started freeriding because of my snowboard friends. So big shout out to you snowboarders. You guys are a lot more creative than us salt and pepper shaker people.
I mean, definitely in the beginning, you hear that so often. I was just watching like an old Candide thing actually too. And he was saying the mm-hmm. same thing. He's like, they're taught. Well, he wasn't saying, cause you know, he doesn't really say anything, but it's
he lets the skiing talk for him.
Exactly. It was being narrated about him that he's like doing all the tricks the snowboarders were doing, and it's like that's how the progression was. It's so
totally.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you about having Katie around for last season. Mm-hmm. She has dubbed herself the number one fan of the Freeride World Tour at this point. And
she's such a groupie.
She will not stop talking about how much of a groupie she is. So what was that like? What was the project in general? Because this will be the first thing that comes out about it, basically. What was it that you guys worked on exactly? And what was it like having someone like her around all season, basically?
Yeah. So we worked on a documentary. It's called Coach. It's about Hedvig Bessel and I working together as coachee and having Katie around, and also Colleen, by the way, who both of them didn't really know very much about the Freeride World Tour. It was really neat to watch how they were just, as they learnt more about the tour and also got to know the riders, how much they fell in love with it. It was awesome to see because, I mean, I'm in love with the tour, and one of the best things for me about the tour was just the riders and being able to shred with all those amazing skiers who have basically found ways to make their passion their job, you know?
Yeah.
It's a special type of person. You don't meet those people too often in everyday life. So having all these, like, super stoked, passionate people to always go ski with was just one of the most special things. But it was awesome to see them like just go through that process of, holy shit, like this tour is amazing. Like, why didn't I know how rad it is?
I feel like a lot of people think that way about it, by the way. Like, that's why I'm so excited for this to come out, because like a lot of people do feel like when they learn about it, they're immediately addicted to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. It really is. So, yeah, and it was fun. And obviously Katie's like, I mean, she's got so many facets. Of course you expect her to be funny all the time, but she also has completely different sides to her, and you can, you know, have amazing conversations with her, and she's just a really creative, intelligent, fun person. So I felt really lucky to be able to work with Katie and with Colleen all last season. It was amazing.
Yeah. Do you feel like having a crew like that around to kind of like document it and make like a film about it, like, does that add anything to your interactions? Like whether it's with Hedvig or whether it's just like the way you are in general, do you feel any different about like just having someone else around that's kind of there to document what's happening?
Like for me, just being there essentially as a staff member, as a coach, and like hosting the insider and commentating and interviewing in the finish line, I didn't have this pressure of having to I did have actually pressure to perform, but not in that physical way that an athlete has to.
Right.
And I 100% understand what it means to be standing up there in that start gate. But even before then, when you're scoping and you're deciding on your line, and it's a very complicated and pretty like involved process. And it is stressful. It can be stressful. And then you have situations like Fieberbrunn where you have to prepare two lines because maybe the line on the look is right is not going to be in condition by the time you ski there. So, you know, preparing two lines adds so much more work in terms of prepping and really internalizing the line so that you can ski it the way you want to. So I think for Hedvig, it would have been much more of an added stress factor than for me. Because it adds, you know, it adds work in terms of being interviewed and like having to get certain shots. So I think Hedvig had, you know, probably more just she would have felt that more. Like I really enjoyed having the film crew around and I thought it was really fun, but I understand, you know, I don't know if Hedvig did, but in her position she really needs to manage her energy levels and maybe say, hey, you know what, I'm not going to do this shoot. I need to focus on, like, right now I need to, like, do my yoga or I need to, like, do some more homework and all the types of things that you have to do on the tour. And often there's not enough time really to study the lines. And then you've got the, like, the riders meeting and then the official bib drawer and then, the athlete presentation and then you've got to maybe have a dinner with your sponsor and it's really intense and you really only have those 4 or 5 runs all season, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is intense, but yeah. It's part of the game. It's a game in my eyes, like to deal with that pressure well and be able to perform like when you need to on the day, regardless of conditions, regardless of really of if you're maybe feeling super confident or not. And that's where the whole mental strength really comes into it.
Yeah, that part of it I think is the hardest thing. I mean, obviously the skiing is the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around, but the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around beyond that is like there's so much pressure on the tour to perform on those couple of runs. Like you're going from place to place to place and like these two runs are what matter, you know? Like that's a ton of mental stress that's got to be going on everyone there. Like I mean, the athletes are like they have to be on like level 10 basically to go out there and perform at the highest level for such a small window of time because that's what counts. Like you said, those runs are their season.
But like I like what you're saying there because this is a good example, right? So if you're an athlete on the tour and you tell yourself, okay, here we are in Fieberbrunn, I need to qualify for the finals and for the tour next year, I have to podium at this stop. I have to podium.
Right.
Okay. So if you're thinking like this and you've got your whole focus on this need to get a certain amount of points and to really like push hard, that adds a lot of pressure and that can cause anxiety. Like that can cause your emotional and arousal levels to be higher than they should be to be able to perform the way you need to be.
For sure.
But say you have a different mindset and you go into it like, okay, like I'm here to challenge myself. That is literally the whole goal of this. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to choose a line where I know it's the right level of challenge. And regardless of what happens, like even if I crash or if things don't go well, then I've really stepped up and I'm on my way to becoming a better skier and a better competitor. It can take a lot of pressure off. So that's what mental strength is to learn where to direct your attention and your focus. And it will, that all hinges a lot on how you feel then how much pressure you actually feel. And then being able to be in the moment when you're in that start gate, to be in the moment so that your body can basically take over and do the job that you've already prepared. Because each of the athletes, I mean, if they're more experienced, they've definitely, they have a blueprint in their head of the line that they're going to ski out of their own perspective. And the more you've prepared that in a really good way, the more that counts as a real practice run because for your brain, there's actually little difference between doing a run in real life and imagining yourself doing the run. So the better you are at visualizing the run, the more it seems like you actually have been able to practice that run. So it's a mental game.
You make it sound so easy.
Well, I have thought a lot about this stuff. It took me years to work this stuff out. Like, literally, I never had a coach or anything, and it was often learning by doing. It, honestly, it took me like a decade to work this out.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it, mm-hmm. yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to think about.
It's so cool.
It is. And I can tell how excited you are about it. And that's what's great. All right. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I did have a couple questions that came in. I know we only just put the question thing up a couple hours ago. But we got a couple in, and I would like to ask you them. Let me just get them pulled up here.
Sure.
I usually try to give it like the full 24 hours, but like we kind of decided that we were doing this today, and I think that's great.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we got a
couple. Gotta be spontaneous in life.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Couple good ones. This one's not really a great question, but it's just from Pow Over Park. They want to know, what skis are you on now, and specifically what model? So it's more like a product plug for you.
Yeah. Well, that question has come up because I announced the end of my partnership with Kessler Skis in June.
Okay.
I'd been with them for 12 years. So that was a really big deal. And people are waiting to find out what the next step is. And
do you know that already?
I do know it, and I'm really excited. I can tell you guys that. It's a really young, dynamic, and super cool company that I'll be able to work like closely together with in testing skis, but also in like working on product and even marketing messages as well as photo and film content. But I can't say it quite yet. It's a little bit early still. I'm sorry, guys. But I'm going to say just, stay tuned.
You're excited about it, though?
I am. I'm really excited. Okay. I have to also say it wasn't an easy decision to leave Kessler, and it was something I thought really long and hard about, because really having sponsors it basically means you're building relationships. And to have invested 12 years in a company, that's a big deal. So
it's a huge deal.
It's a big deal, yeah. So, but yeah, I'm really excited. I'm glad I took the plunge, like, especially now that was a scary decision to make. But it was the right decision, and I'm very excited about making the announcement soon.
All right. Well, you'll have to let us know.
Thanks for the question.
You'll keep us updated.
I will.
And then the last one I wanted to ask you, or actually Renee McCurdy wanted to ask you, was advice for handling criticism as a female skier.
I like that. Advice for handling criticism. Well,
I feel like it's kind of vague too. Like, it is a little vague.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the exact situation, but like, if we keep it on a bit of a general level, criticism can sting if you let it, if you let it touch your self-worth as a person. So basically, you know, people who do have problems taking criticism is because they feel like they're worth a little bit less because of this criticism. But again, this ties in with the learning and growth mindset, which is essentially a flow mindset. You know, if you can think of criticism as this opportunity to learn. You can see it like this golden nugget, because it might give you feedback that is going to just get you that little bit further in the direction that you want to go. So to try and see it with an open mind, not take it personally, and ask yourself, what can I learn here? Like, what can I take with me? And if it's criticism that you feel isn't justified, you can also decide to just let that go. You don't have to take everything on board, you know? That would be my advice.
Right. Awesome. Well, Lorraine, thank you for your time. And where can people find you on social media and on the internet in general? And anything you want to plug, feel free.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Adam. It's been great to chat. The best place is Instagram. That would be @LorraineHuber. And also I've got a Facebook account, And my website is lorrainehuber.com. I've also got a newsletter, so you can sign up to that, especially if you're a female wanting to do or wanting to progress in your freeride and ski touring skills, because I offer female-specific camps every year in Lech Yamalberg for that, called the Women's Progression Days. Really proud of that.
I wanted to ask you about that, and I totally forgot. But yeah,
It's super fun.
But it's on the website. You guys do have dates scheduled, right? Like for 2021 already.
We do. The Freeride Camp is going to be from the 21st to the 24th of January, and the Ski Touring Camp is the 4th to the 7th of March. And they're both in Lech.
Awesome.
I'm Arlberg in Austria.
Very cool. Awesome. Thank you. That was episode number who knows what with Lorraine Huber. I hope you guys enjoyed it. On Thursday, we have someone else, and I'm not going to tell you who yet because I don't really know yet, because we got a few in the bank and I need to figure out which one makes the most sense right now. But we've got some really fun stuff coming up. Keep doing your thing. Keep following us on the social medias. Keep doing whatever you're doing. Oh, yeah, leaving us reviews on iTunes. That's an important thing. I know I keep saying there's going to be more YouTube stuff, but there will be more YouTube stuff eventually. So you can check that stuff out. It's all just at Out of Podcast. If you want to see me be salty a lot, it is Twitter, just at Out of Podcast. That is definitely where I am the most not nice about gear, especially, I think, or not even not nice. I think I'm pretty fair, but nobody's paying me to be like, well... Not many people, I guess, are paying me to be like, yeah, this stuff is really good. So it is what it is. And actually, you know what? Even Fisher's like, they don't pay me to say it's good. They pay me to support the brand and promote them in a nice light. Like, I shit on them sometimes too. So it is what it is. All right. See you when we see you. Bye.